Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday the 25th of August 2026. My name is Bridget and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen and read by Hazel Hobbs and Sean Kendall. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Loffel. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online. Additionally, in case it's useful to you, the sunrise and sunset times this week will range from 6:04 on Monday 24th of August to 6:14 on Sunday 30th of August. And the sunset times this week will range from 20:09 on Monday 24th of August to 19:57 on Sunday 30th of August.
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Ox Talk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Ox Talk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.
A 276-bed capsule hotel plan for Oxford City Centre is set for approval in the coming weeks. Criterion Capital's Zedwell hotel chain is planning to fill Oxenford House on Magdalen Street above Five Guys with sleep pods or cocoons. City Council officers have recommended its planning committee approves the plans at its next meeting. If proposals are green-lit, the building would be extended and dormitory rooms would have rectangular capsules containing a mattress and some storage space for each occupant. The plans propose sleeping pods instead of rooms in the new hotel. In the planning application submitted to Oxford City Council in March, the applicant said a capsule hotel is a modern and efficient form of visitor accommodation that offers compact, self-contained sleeping pods arranged both vertically and horizontally to make most optimal use of the space. The City Planning Officer's report said the change of use of the building would make best and most efficient use of the land and the loss of the ancillary place of worship. Oxenford House, a modern brutalist style building designed by Fitzroy Robinson and Partners, was built in the 1960s. It currently has a vacant former nightclub basement and vacant offices, but the first floor is the Oxford Centre for Hindu Studies. The report added, the application primarily involves internal alterations to the existing building to facilitate the proposed change of use. Planning permission is sought for an extension to the fourth and fifth floor roof space to accommodate additional and improved plant rooms to allow for the essential operation of the hotel. Previously, a proposal was made to use the building for student accommodation. When the hotel use plan was submitted, there was relief shared. Plans have not gone without objection. St John's Street Area Residents Association said, we would be pleased to see this building brought back into full use and the badly neglected corner of the city centre conservation area tidied up. However, we consider that this application fails to meet the standards which should be required for the applications for substantial work on the buildings, which are in the conservation area and close to listed buildings. It shared concern about the lack of even basic facilities, such as vending machines for drinks and snacks, and anywhere to consume the food. The objection added, it is not clear what, if any, supervision of the site there will be apart from the reception area. With close to 300 pods packed into a small site, there is an obvious risk of criminality, fires, accidents, etc. An officer for Thames Valley Police said they had no objection as long as the conditions for a hotel management plan and security arrangements were included in the planning permission. Previously, Halima Aziz, head of hotels at Zedwell, said, Oxford is one of the world's most iconic and culturally rich cities, making it a natural fit for Zedwell as we continue to scale up across the UK.
Britain's rampant reliance on benefits must be reined in. The vast sum of money spent on welfare handouts is one of the most pressing problems in modern Britain. A farcical situation has been allowed to develop, which sees many sectors reliant on overseas labour, pushing up the population and intensifying pressures on the NHS and other public services. Yet at the same time, millions of others are paid benefits to sit at home, luxuriating in the knowledge that the taxpayer will cover their bills. This absurdity cannot continue. Yet labour is a cause of this predicament and is most definitely not the cure. It prefers to keep the less well-off in a state-dependent stupor, a perverse deal which boils down to vote for us and we'll keep bumping up your benefits. Cabinet Minister Pat McFadden has even admitted, it emerged earlier this year, that every meeting he had with members of Parliamentary Labour Party boiled down to who can we tax in order to pay benefits to others? Thankfully, the other parties are responding with robust proposals which will allow the £334 billion annual benefits bill to be slashed in a way that will boost economic growth by getting people back to work. Reform UK's initial ideas indicate the level of boldness and ambition that is required. With full details due to emerge later, they suggest that they can save £50 billion a year. But it is already clear their plans will require a renegotiation of Britain's EU withdrawal agreement so Europeans with settled status here can be excluded from most benefits. There is unlikely to be wide public support for reopening that particular can of worms, even among those who staunchly supported the historic Brexit vote a decade ago. Meanwhile, the Conservatives have set out plans to reassess all existing disability cases and end claims for low-level mental health problems, such as anxiety. They would also restore the two-child benefits cap, which was so recklessly scrapped by the spendthrift Labour Party. In a crucial difference from Reform's proposals, the Tories would retain welfare entitlement for those with EU settled status. This is a further sign that Kemi Badenoch is making great strides in rebuilding her party's fortunes with compelling and credible policies. It may be that Tory policy can be further improved to cut yet more unjustified spending, which would be all to the good. What is absolutely certain is that rampant welfare reliance is dragging this country down and must be reversed before it is too late. Another sign of Ms. Badenoch's pragmatism is her determination to address the many injustices caused by human rights laws. The European Convention on Human Rights has been twisted far beyond its original goals of protecting life and limb. Instead, in many cases, it undermines rather than upholds the rule of law. So the Conservatives' long overdue pledge to leave the ECHR will result in a wide range of positive developments. One of those, this party spells out, will be the ability to address illegal traveller sites and other antisocial behaviour by a small number within that community. The cosseted liberal elite will inevitably cry foul, but it is fundamental to justice that wrongdoers should not receive a free pass merely because they come from a minority group.
Oxford Council submits plans for affordable Northway homes. 16 new council homes could be built on the site of a derelict former children's home. Oxford City Council has submitted a full planning application to redevelop Maltfield House in Northway into fully affordable housing as part of its wider affordable housing supply programme. Linda Smith, Cabinet Member for Housing and Communities, said, "We've said that Oxford needs more affordable homes, and now we're getting on with building them across the city." Submitting the planning application for Maltfield House is another important step towards turning this derelict site into 16 new council homes for local people. These will be high-quality, energy-efficient homes for social rent, helping people in our housing register at the time when demand has never been higher. I look forward to seeing work progress and, subject to planning permission, welcoming new residents to Maltfield House. The scheme is being developed by the council through its housing revenue account and will help reduce pressure on temporary accommodation while meeting demand from those on the housing register. Kidlington-based construction company Kingley Partnerships was appointed in November 2025 to lead the design and build. The homes are planned to be energy efficient, accessible and well integrated with the surrounding area. Darren Arakion, Managing Director of Kingley Partnership, said, "We are delighted to have achieved the certificate milestone of planning application for this important project to improve the housing situation for those most in need, together with our partner, Oxford City Council. Subject to planning permission, construction is expected to progress towards completion in 2028.
Ministers were under pressure Sunday night to close a legal loophole that allows paedophiles and perverts to change their identity. The Daily Mail can today reveal a convicted sex offender adopted as many as 20 aliases to hide his convictions. Jason Brown was dubbed a danger to women and children after repeatedly, yet shockingly legally, changing his name to shield his criminal past as he formed relationships with unsuspecting partners. In an extraordinary case which has reignited calls for a crackdown, the 50-year-old former firefighter moved around the country, preying on women and children and adopting a new persona as soon as he was caught. Campaigners are calling for urgent new safeguards as scores of sex offenders are due to be released from jail in October, while many others will no longer face prison under Labour's soft justice reforms. When Brown was convicted 12 years ago, he was labelled a monster with a warning that he could disappear and start this all over again if the law was not tightened. But since then, despite numerous promises by politicians across the spectrum, little has changed. Brown reinvented himself after every conviction, hiding his horrifying past even while he was being investigated for rape and sexual assault. The pervert, who has convictions for sexual acts against children, was finally exposed after a woman bravely fought to put him behind bars when she discovered that her live-in lover was a convicted paedophile being prosecuted for rape, and allegation of which he was eventually cleared under a different name. When Brown last pleaded guilty to the 12th breach of a sexual harm prevention order after being caught holding hands with a 9-month-old baby girl, it emerged that he had even changed his name in the middle of his prosecution. The shocking case comes just days after leaders of every police force in the UK wrote to the Prime Minister raising concerns about public protection, victim confidence and community safety after the government announced plans to release offenders early and jail fewer criminals by ditching shorter prison sentences. This means thousands of sex offenders who would have been given custodial sentences will instead be managed in the community through remote measures such as wearing electronic tags. Labour promised to tighten restrictions on sex offenders in the Crime and Policing Act, but the new law merely changed the obligation on criminals to alert police 7 days beforehand rather than 3 days after their name change. Emily Constantas, founder of the Safeguarding Alliance, said the case illustrated the ease with which offenders were able to change their identity to fool the public. He, Brown, has targeted women and children. The ability to keep changing his name has given him a free pass, she said. This man represents a risk to every woman and child. This case is shocking on so many levels. It just makes my blood boil. We have been campaigning for 8 years for a ban, and it is so upsetting that had our reforms been implemented, he would never have the ability to do this. Sex offenders are exploiting this loophole, and the government is well aware of the issue. The safety of children, women, and vulnerable adults should never be secondary concern. Ms. Constantas said the recent changes to the law were ineffective because the onus was still on sexual offenders to alert police to their new names. She added, "It's lip service. There is no more protection for people because this loophole will continue to be exploited. They get to start a new life because it is like erasing their past. How many children have to be sexually abused? How many women have to be duped into marrying sex offenders for the government to take action to protect the public? This is an argument about human rights, but if you are a registered sex offender, you are on that register because you are deemed to be a risk to society. How can you protect victims when you put the rights of offenders first?" When Brown was first convicted of child sex offenders in 2014, one source close to a victim warned, "We are just hoping the system is robust enough to deal with him when he is released from prison, so that he does not disappear and start this all over again. He is very charismatic and he does not look like a monster, but he is a monster. He has moved all around the country in the past and he has changed his name. That cannot be allowed to happen again." More than 11,500 registered sex offenders were prosecuted for failing to notify changes of information between 2019 and 2022. Records suggest another 700 sex offenders have gone missing, many due to an identity change between 2019 and 2021. In one force alone, more than 500 criminals changed their name in 23 months. Currently, offenders can change their name by DPOL, which costs roughly £50 and takes only 15 minutes online. Rotherham's Labour MP Sarah Champion, who has campaigned to close the loophole, said of the Brown case, "I am disgusted at how easy it is for sex offenders to change their name to escape justice. This gaping loophole needs to be closed. I've shared my horror about this safeguarding risk with countless ministers, all of whom promised to act, but still offenders are exploiting the system." Ms. Champion added, "Unless this loophole is closed, the schemes that allow us to check if someone has a past record of offences are pointless." A Home Office spokesman said, "Registered sex offenders are required to notify the police of any change of name, and failure to do so is a criminal offence. Protecting the public from dangerous sexual offenders remains a top priority. We are strengthening the powers available to police through the Crime and Policing Act of 2026.
Oxford Castle Quarter regeneration plans have been submitted. Proposals for the Oxford Castle Quarter have been submitted amid plans to transform vacant buildings with a virtual reality heritage experience, wine bar, and motorsport simulators. The historic area of the city around the 11th century Norman Castle already includes a luxury hotel, restaurants, and Oxford Castle Prison. In May this year, the County Council, which was already the freeholder, bought the lease for the quarter for £28.5 million, with the plans to boost the area between the railway station and Westgate. Oxford Unwrapped has now submitted three planning applications for its multi-venue experience in the quarter, just off of New Road in the city centre, as part of its large-scale regeneration scheme. The cluster of buildings involved in the project were built in the early 2000s and are set to become four vibrant venues if plans are approved. These will be named Virtual Oxford, Fuel, Stocks at Castle Quarter, and Oxfordshire 360 Degrees, and consist of a virtual reality heritage experience, cafe or wine bar, and an F1 themed motorsport simulator. A planning statement said, "The primary business function of the Oxford Unwrapped venture is to provide a commercial visitor offer that educates and entertains residents and visitors to Oxford. The proposals are likely to complement the existing tourist facilities found in the Oxford Castle area and will provide quiet and respectful use of the premises. The former La Tasca Tapas Bar, which closed in 2016, a former Pizza Express, which closed in 2020, are set to be refurbished. The former Tapas Bar proposal describes a plan for an entire exterior refurbishment due to the dilapidated state of the facility. Previously, a spokesman for Oxford Unwrapped said, "Evidence exists that the town and gown have a confused appearance for visitors, with limited or no access to the University of Oxford, a poor welcome with no central tourist information centre, attractions that operate today are poor and don't deliver. Tourists are looking for somewhere to see its rich history, tradition and architecture explained. According to plans, the Fuel experience will be dedicated to the history of Oxfordshire's five Formula One teams and is set to offer pay-and-play motorsport simulators with an Oxford Grand Prix and a cafe below the providing pizza, waffles and crepes. Previously, Oxford Unwrapped has described its further plans for an immersive virtual reality panoramic screen named Oxfordshire 360, taking visitors through the history of the city on weekdays whilst transforming into a planetarium focusing on the stars in the evenings. It said the space could become a music venue at weekends featuring local bands, enhanced by virtual laser shows and special effects for an awe-inspiring view. Plans for new signage, a change of use from a restaurant to a cafe and virtual reality entertainment venue, and a commercial building to a community and learning venue are all open for consultation until Monday, September the 14th.
They are known for their love of avocado on toast, wellness and matcha lattes. But it seems the comfort ends there for Gen Z, with almost half of those 18 to 29 going through a so-called quarter-life crisis, a study suggests. Events such as studying, moving into the next stage of education, and housing problems have left young Britons in dire straits, according to the research led by University of Greenwich. Each of these issues affects more than one in five young adults, and the subject has become top popular on TikTok. Some 14% said they were struggling with adult independence. 18% said they were in crisis due to uncertainty about their future opportunities. And 15% said identity issues were a predicament. The researchers studied 2,247 young adults across eight countries: the UK, Greece, Turkey, Brazil, Indonesia, India, Pakistan, and the Czech Republic, to discover whether the phenomenon was universal. They found that more than 30% of Gen Z in each nation were affected. Researchers told the volunteers that a quarter-life crisis was a turning point lasting several years in which life was noticeably more difficult, stressful, and unstable than normal, and then asked if they were experiencing it. The study, published in the journal Emerging Adulthood, found the level of Gen Z quarter-life crises ranged from 40% in Greece to 77% in India. In the UK, where 280 took part, the rate was 44%. They most commonly reported feeling negative about themselves, fearful, anxious, sad, or down. study leader Professor Oliver Robinson said, "We talk about a midlife crisis when people start questioning their lives and can make big decisions like changing career or getting a divorce. There is also a later life crisis which older people feel around retirement and children leaving home. But the quarter life crisis comes at a similar time of transition, when young people are also feeling locked out of opportunities like jobs and worried about the future, or locked in to choices they've already made which might be the wrong ones. They are trying to figure out who they are and often navigating relationship problems and breakups." He added that they appear to happen consistently across different cultures and may just be a part of the human journey.
A boy from Oxford who was last seen in Headington over a week ago is listed as officially missing, as police say they are concerned for his well-being. Aldo, whose surname has not been released, was reported missing to the Thames Valley Police on August 11th. The force said that he was last seen in the Headington area at 4 p.m. on that day. On Thursday, August 20th, police launched a public appeal in an attempt to find him, asking people who have information which could help to come forward. Aldo is of Southeast European background and has Mediterranean features. He is described as a white male with olive tan skin, grey or blue eyes, short brown hair, and a slim build. He is approximately 5'4" tall and tends to wear casual clothes like joggers, hoodies, and trainers. He is known to have links in London and Glasgow. A spokesperson for Thames Valley Police said, "We are concerned for Aldo's well-being. If you have any information which you may assist with our inquiries, please call us on 101, quoting 432-604-16426.
Double maths was, in my school days, an entry in the timetable that struck dread into the hearts of most pupils, other than the gifted few with the facility for figures. In South Korea, private investors are faced with having to go back to school before they are allowed to invest in certain high-risk funds because the government there is so worried about people losing their shirts on highly volatile stock market. The authorities recently raised the education requirements. The programs have not prevented investors, known as ants, from losing billions through bets on companies such as Samsung and SK Hynix. It's a very un-British approach, but it caught my eye because despite excellent A-level results last week, the UK is in the grip of a numeracy crisis and financial education is patchy at best. Leave aside the brilliant A-level and university students, around half of working-age adults have the mathematical prowess of an 11-year-old, and many brag that they are rubbish at figures as if it were a badge of honour. Mere mortals don't need to grasp the Jacobean conjecture that is gripping the world of AI at the moment, which is just as well in my case. But a House of Lords inquiry into numeracy this year heard that the widespread lack of the most basic number sense is a huge obstacle to social mobility, financial well-being, and even health. Professor Hannah Fry testified that there is evidence that people who have type 1 diabetes end up with worse glucose control if they have low numeracy skills. In my work on osteoporosis, I discovered many women are refusing medication because it carries a very, very small chance, as low as 1 in 10,000, of causing a serious dental complication. Yet the treatment could bring a significant reduction in the much higher risk of a serious fracture, which might be a 1 in 10 chance. Bobby Siegel, a University Challenge star and math teacher, told peers about an exercise where he asked his pupils to work out the average height of their classmates. One insisted the answer was 2.7 metres, or nearly 9 feet, and refused to accept it was wrong because it came up on his calculator. Water company Severn Trent testified some of its apprentice intake had problems telling the time. I recently encountered a young retail worker who couldn't tell the time from a clock face in, of all places, a shop selling watches. Poor numeracy leaves voters vulnerable to having the wool pulled over their eyes by charlatans from all parties fiddling the stats. And when coupled with the lack of knowledge about investment, it can lead people down potentially ruinous routes with their money from crypto to meme stocks. The astounding gains in some AI stocks are likely to have created unrealistic expectations among novice investors that will end in tears if the bubble bursts. Problems like these will become more acute as more people have to take responsibility for managing their own stock market-linked pensions. Moves are afoot to strengthen financial education in schools, but even if this happens, many adults are floundering, left vulnerable to rip-offs, scams, and basic misunderstandings about debt and savings, meaning their personal finances are less secure than they could be. I rather enjoyed maths in Mr. Proctor's classroom at Staintsbridge School when back in the day. Not so much that I would want to take a refresher, but for many of us, it might not be a bad idea.
Schools across Oxford found out how they did on GCSE Results Day 2026. Thousands of pupils in the city arrived at their respective schools on Thursday, August 20th, and open those all-important letters. There were smiles and hugs at Oxford Spires Academy on Glanville Road as classmates found out their grades. Sarah Sayan got mostly sevens as well as a 9 and a 6 and is planning to stay at the school's sixth form for A-levels. "I'm glad about my results. Hard work pays off," she said. "I feel like some people made GCSEs much bigger and much more stressful than they really are. The only way to do it is just to get through it, and there's no easy way around it. I'm staying here at Oxford Spires to do biology, chemistry, maths and French. Most people are staying on for A-levels here, including my friends, so that's an advantage for me as I won't be alone, at least. My plan is mainly to do something in STEM, hopefully medicine, but we'll see as time goes by." Head teacher Louise Cowley said, "We're so pleased to celebrate yet another year of improving results, with our English and maths going up. And across the board, especially in our languages, where we've had new specification, and students have done incredibly well. So it's been lovely celebrating with them and celebrating with the teachers that made it all happen." Over at Magdalens College School, 58% of all grades were grade 9. 83% of grades were 9 to 8, and 93% were 9 to 7. Among those celebrating were Jimmy, Lucas, Rishi, Aidan, Aaron, Finbar, Jay, Christian, Jonathan and Arthur, who all achieved 10 grade 9s. Master Helen Pike said, "Our fifth form pupils threw themselves into their GCSEs with the energy and commitment they bring to every part of school life. And their remarkable achievements in these examinations are matched by the many ways in which they have contributed to and enriched our community beyond the classroom. Congratulations to them and to the teachers and parents who have guided and encouraged them along the way." Greyfriars Catholic School also welcomed pupils to collect their GCSEs, with some achieving an almost clean sweep of grade 9s. Headteacher Lindsay Caldwell said, "We are incredibly proud of our students and of the determination and resilience represented in the results they receive. We have watched them overcome challenges and achieve things that they can be genuinely proud of. Today we celebrate how far they have come and look forward to where they go next. Go Greyfriars." Oxford High School students are celebrating over 50% of GCSE grades awarded 9, with 74% of all results between 9 and 8. Cassie, an under-16 England touch rugby team player, combined her passion for sport with subjects such as textiles. It was in this which she was recognised by the OCR Examination Board as being one of the top candidates in the country. After gaining an impressive 8 9s and 8s overall, she will go on to become a STEM scholar at OHS Sixth Form. Maria Gardner-Legg, head of Oxford High School, said, "Today is an occasion to celebrate not only the grades our students have achieved, but the young women they have become in the process. They have made an extraordinary range of contributions to the school and will continue to grasp these opportunities in our sixth form. I want to thank everybody who has helped guide them in our community, including our dedicated staff and supported families. Over 96.2% of students taking maths and English GCSEs at City of Oxford College and University Centre achieved a pass in this year's exams. Many of the college's GCSE students are learners who have resat maths, English or both to continue in education or progress their careers." Head teacher of Oxford Academy, Nora Ward, said, "We are proud of our Year 11 pupils for the hard work and resilience they've demonstrated throughout the key Stage 4 studies. As our students move forward, whether continuing in our sixth form or pursuing external training, we wish them every success and remain committed to supporting all pupils in reaching their full potential."
The sound of Concord, a sort of approaching rumble, was so distinctive that you didn't have to look up when it went overhead, but we always did. There was no sight like it. On the day 23 years ago when the supersonic aircraft took to the skies for the final time, people stood and stared all along its flight path. That machine was loved in a way I don't believe any other jet aeroplane ever has been. Concorde crash, days that shocked the world, conveyed little of that affection. The hour-long documentary opened with a brief history of the Anglo-French plane, but got down to business within 10 minutes, analysing the Air France flight 4590 disaster in July 2000 at the Paris Charles de Gaulle airport that cost 113 lives. This would have been acceptable if the analysis was thorough. Instead, the programme stuck rigidly to the official version without even hinting at the compelling but unproven theories that the authorities refused to discuss. There's a fascinating story here, but this show only covered half of it. This is not disputed in that as the plane took off with 100 passengers and 9 crew on board, sheets of flame roared from the two engines on the left wing. Unable to generate enough thrust to stay airborne, the Concorde dropped out of the sky, killing everyone on board and 4 people on the ground. Many of the bereaved learned their loved ones were dead from news reports. They included Francine Quignon-Fleuret, daughter of the flight engineer, Giles Jardineau, who held back tears as she described how proud her dad was to be a new grandfather. This was to be his final trip before retirement. Looking at the photo that appeared on every newspaper front page around the world, of the plane ablaze with its heat haze shimmering around its white delta wings, "My heart aches and I cry," she said. Investigators explained how a piece of twisted titanium discovered on the runway supplied a clue to the cause. When one wheel ran over the metal, which had fallen off a DC-10 10 minutes earlier, a tyre exploded with such force that the fuel tank was ruptured and was set alight by the heat of the engines. What this account ignored was the discovery by British investigative journalist David Rose that Air France engineers servicing the plane 4 days earlier had failed to replace a vital component known as a spacer, which keep the wheels in alignment. Without this part, the plane wobbled on the runway like a faulty supermarket trolley, something that was evident from the sooty tyre tracks along the tarmac. The documentary showed these tracks, but said nothing about them. Neither did it remark that the French president, Jacques Chirac, was in a jumbo jet on an adjacent taxiway and that the flailing Concorde might easily have veered into it. Surely that was worth mentioning.
Concerns have been raised that authorities don't have a proper grip on major Oxford infrastructure projects amid a clear pattern of repeated failures. This past week has seen a delay to the opening of Ensham Park and Ride revealed, marks the 2-year anniversary of the partial closure of Donington Bridge, and 1 month until the repeatedly postponed reopening date for Botley Road. County opposition leader and West Oxfordshire councillor Liam Walker from the Conservatives has said, "There is now a clear pattern in Oxfordshire where major infrastructure projects are announced with big price tags and big promises, then delayed again and again. I'm seriously concerned for the County Council simply doesn't have a proper grip on the managing of these schemes." He said, "Residents and businesses are paying the price for these repeated failures, and someone needs to start taking responsibility. Ensham Park and Ride, a multi-million pound car park to nowhere, is now expected to open in the summer of 2028, more than a year after the Council's previous estimates, with the project not set to be completed until 2029. The park and ride with 850 spaces was finished in 2024 and has sat empty ever since, costing around £10,000 a month in maintenance and security. Mr. Walker said, "The constant delays, redesigns and changing timetables are a damning indictment of the way the project has been managed. The Lib Dem administration simply does not have a clue what's going on when it comes to delivering the key infrastructure West Oxfordshire desperately needs. And perhaps most frustratingly, nobody ever seems to be held accountable for this appalling project management. It is unable to open as it was not connected to the road, and delays on the A40 roadworks between Ensham and Wolvercote continue to render it unusable." Finance boss and ward member for Ensham, Dan Levy of the Liberal Democrats, previously described the situation as embarrassing, but building the park and ride before getting roads funding had saved money due to inflation. A previous council report had stated that if works on the A40 scheme did not begin by mid-June, the project would blow its £70 million budget. They are now set to start in the autumn. A council spokesman said, "The council's target throughout has been to open the park and ride during 2027, and that remained the programme we are working towards. However, the later than anticipated granting of a planning permission, together with the time required to discharge planning conditions, complete utility provisions, and undertake the preparatory works before the main construction can begin, has required a review of the programme. This week, MP for Witney, Charlie Maynard, from the Liberal Democrats, warned, "Our roads have suffered from years and years of underinvestment, and the congestion is a major problem. While calling on the government to work with councils to address structural problems." He shared this amid concern about the housing targets, saying, "Anyone who lives in my constituency can see that our infrastructure is not up to scratch. An infrastructure issue where government support is being sought by the council is Donington Bridge and the closure to buses. Wednesday, August 19th, marked the 2-year anniversary of the emergency restriction banning buses from the key Thames crossing into Oxford due to its deterioration. The County Council has applied to the Government Structures Fund, seeking £8 million for its repairs, but this support is yet to be confirmed and no timeline for the possible reopening has been given by the County Council. Earlier this month, Ward Councillor Brad Baines of Labour warned, "Full options appraisal is not expected until December." This follows an internal audit from the council which gave its bridge management services the worst possible rating. Save Our Buses campaigner Judith Sucker described how 2 years from the emergency ban being made, bus journeys and access to places of worship, Donington Health Centre, retail areas and Harwell campus have been restricted and lost. A minibus service has been running across the bridge but does not provide a full timetable, and the County Council has said it will not be financially viable to put one in place. A County Council spokesman said, "Across local government there is limited funding for bridge repairs and the councils collectively are doing the best they can. While there is no end date in sight for the Donington Bridge partial closure, a project which has seen multiple possible end dates missed is Botley Road. Sunday, September the 20th, is the anticipated date for its reopening to traffic after what was supposed to be a 6-month closure has extended to over 3 years. Limited access to the city bus route and major financial implications for our businesses have been described as some of the impacts of the drawn-out closure. The most recent delay saw the postponement from an August to reopening to September amid the unexpected gas leak. Network Rail has apologised to residents and businesses over the disruption. Mr Walker questioned, Botley Road is a Network Rail's project, but where has the pressure been from the County Council after years of disruption? While noting the millions generated from the congestion charge throughout. This year has seen a change to the way Oxfordshire's administration runs its roads. In May, the County Council's cabinet divided up the transport chiefs portfolio into two, creating a highways construction and repair role for former County Councillor Liz Leftman. This split up responsibility for highways maintenance, major road schemes and bridges away from the public transport, traffic and travel planning, transport boss jobs. Responding to concern about the council's handling of the major infrastructure projects, Ms Leftman said, the County Council is determined to drive forward every scheme it is involved in. These are complex projects and it's not always possible to accurately predict the construction periods. Delays can happen because of complex funding arrangements, challenges with the planning process, negotiations with landowners, or other unforeseen factors. Every council in the country grapples with these issues. They are not unique to Oxfordshire.
About a quarter of patient referrals to hospitals are being rejected and returned to GPs, a poll has found. More than a third of the so-called bounce backs that doctors received asked them to do work considered outside their remit. Some GPs are now raising concerns that this is creating delays for suspected cancer patients. In the survey of 712 GPs by healthcare magazine Pulse, doctors estimated that 26% of referrals were returned under the category of advice and guidance, A&G, even though this was not requested. A&G is designed for GPs to seek specialist advice before making referrals. But these unsolicited returns means that those patients who doctors had intended to refer to hospital had to return to their GP for specialist advice. One London GP said they felt the system was getting more risky and unsafe and contributed to their decision to leave general practice. Family doctors also estimated that 36% of the A&G they received required them to go outside of their normal remit. One in the North East also warned that A&G was creating increasing barriers to two-week wait gastrointestinal referrals for patients with red flag suspected cancer symptoms. Dr. Claire Bannon, GP's committee chairman of the British Medical Association, told Pulse, where a referral is requested, hospital trusts are contractually obliged to accept referrals from general practice, except in very limited circumstances. Referrals should not simply be rejected with requests for additional GP actions unless a part of a locally agreed pathway. A Department of Health and Social Care spokesman said, under this government, the A&G model has supported millions of patients to receive care in the right place without having to join elective waiting lists. This is helping more patients to receive timely and appropriate care in primary and community settings.
Oxfordshire County Council is silent on the new 15 mile per hour speed limits for certain road users. The Cambridgeshire equivalent has become the UK's first authority to tackle bike lane speeding with the new speed limits. Big signs have been installed that will flash when cyclists, e-bikes and e-scooters are going above 15 miles per hour, telling them to slow down. The Oxford Mail contacted Oxfordshire County Council asking whether it would look at ever installing these in a bid to tackle dangers for pedestrians. However, the authority and its transport chief, Gareth Epps, has not responded to the questions. Meanwhile, Thames Valley Police has over the years been doing its bit to tackle the scourge of speeding and illegal e-scooters and e-bikes. PCSO Joshua Tedstone said earlier this week, "We continue to receive concerns from residents regarding the use of these vehicles on roads, pavements and other public areas, including reports of dangerous driving, excessive speeds and antisocial behaviour. the North East Oxford Neighbourhood Policing Team will be taking robust action against the illegal use of e-scooters and e-bikes across the area. He added, "Our team will be conducting targeted patrols and enforcement activity, and where appropriate, we will seize vehicles and take further action against those found riding illegally." Adding that the council would monitor its. Cambridgeshire Council spokesman said, "The speed limits have been introduced to help keep all users of the path which runs alongside the busway safe," adding that the council would monitor its effectiveness.
Amy Hunt and her gold medal-winning relay teammates were caught up in a huge security operation that brought travel chaos to the European Championships in Birmingham last Saturday night. Armed police arrived in significant numbers at the Alexander Stadium after a man in his 30s was spotted behaving suspiciously around 8:15 p.m. He was later arrested on suspicion of fraud. The episode caused the cancellation of 6 medal ceremonies inside the venue, with major disruption erupting outside. Buses for spectators and hundreds of athletes and coaches, including the one carrying Hunt and the rest of the victorious 4x100-metre quartet, were delayed by up to 2 hours. It is understood that police conducted searches on the buses that were due to ferry competitors, staff and fans back to the city centre. As of yesterday, the individual arrested by West Midlands Police was still in custody. A West Midlands Police statement said, "A man was arrested following concerns of suspicious activity at the European Athletics Championship last night. At around 8:15 p.m, concerns were raised after a man was found in an area of Alexander Stadium with this wrong accreditation. As a precaution, security measures were put in place and transport for the championship staff and athletes was suspended. This then led to delays to transport from the stadium for the wider public. A man in his 30s was arrested on suspicion of fraud and remains in custody for questioning. We understand the concern this may have caused and can confirm there was no immediate risk to the public. As always, our priority is the safety of the public and we want to thank everyone for the patience." A statement from championship organisers read, "Transport was suspended until the necessary security measures had been carried out, while West Midlands Police arrested a man in his 30s on suspicion of fraud. The safety and well-being of our spectators, athletes, workforce and the wider championships family will always be our first priority."
Oxford United's League One rivals have confirmed Premier League signings, while Stan Mills finally agrees a Preston North End deal in the division's transfer latest. Yellows head coach Aaron Ramsey confirmed last week that the club has agreed a deal for Mills to move to Preston North End in the Championship. It brings an end to weeks of rumours linking the winger to Preston. However, the 22-year-old still missed out on action in Oxford's first game of the league season after asking not to play that morning. The Ewes drew 2-2 with newly promoted MK Dons at home, centre-back Kieran Brown bagging the last-gasp equaliser to rescue a point. Whilst Ramsey's side remain under a temporary transfer embargo, clubs across the third tier have continued to strengthen with some recruiting Premier League players. Most recently, last season's playoff finalists Stockport County have signed winger Ethan Ennis from Manchester United. The 21-year-old joins on a 3-year deal for an undisclosed fee after scoring 3 times in League Two for Fleetwood Town on a loan last season. A product of the Red Devils Academy, Ennis never made a first team appearance for the Premier League Giants, but will also look to make a name for himself in Jimmy McNulty's side. Coming from the other half of Manchester, league rivals Luton Town have bought in winger Emilio Laurence on loan. The young wide man arrives from Manchester City on a season-long loan after spending the second half of the last season with the Hatters. 20-year-old Laurence scored twice in 21 appearances for Jack Wilshere's Hatters. Wilshere is a former Arsenal teammate of Hugh's boss Ramsey. With the two clubs mentioned so far for competing signings of a youthful nature, AFC Wimbledon have brought in someone with vast EFL experience. The Dons have signed 34-year-old Andy Yardom in a deal until January. The defender has almost 400 appearances with the EFL, with the likes of Reading, Barnet and Barnsley, spending a hefty 8 years with the Royals. During those 8 years, the Ghana international won Player of the Season in 2021-22 and played over 250 times with the Berkshire club. Looking north, third-tier giants Sheffield Wednesday are reportedly looking at Premier League reinforcement. According to The Star, the Owls are edging in on the signing of Liverpool starlet Kieran Morrison. Henrik Pedersen's side have held talks with him as they aim to bring in the 19-year-old on a season-long loan. The Northern Ireland international is a right winger who can also play as an attacking midfielder and was previously linked to the clubs higher up in the pyramid in Middlesbrough, Wolverhampton Wanderers and Bristol City. Morrison will join names such as former Barcelona and Aston Villa striker Louis Barry and returning club legend Barry Bannon in strengthening the recently relegated club.
Any owner will tell you the way to their pet's heart is through their stomach, but it seems horses may buck this trend, as study suggests, as they often choose human interaction over more food. The animals were more likely to choose a small portion of apple offered by a friendly person over a bigger portion from another with a detached attitude. The importance of an emotional connection was such that it overrode the food motivation itself, the Italian researchers said in the study published in the journal Animal Behaviour. In trials, horses were made to choose between a plate with half an apple and a plate with a quarter of an apple. The horses which consistently chose the larger option were then taken through to the next stage. There they were repeatedly shown two unfamiliar women, one behaving in a friendly manner, smiling and making eye contact and offering a quarter of an apple, and the other behaving in an unfriendly manner, avoiding eye contact and appearing bored and offering half an apple. Next, both women were presented at the same time and the horse could choose which one to approach. Overall, horses chose the friendly person, suggesting they valued a socially rewarding interaction with a human more than a primary resource such as food, the researchers from the University of Padova concluded.
A new £20,000 fund has been launched to support grassroots music in Oxford. Oxford City Council has created the Grassroots Music Fund to help musicians, promoters and venues by offering financial support for performance and rehearsal spaces. Funding was secured at Budget Council, with £20,000 allocated during the year 2026-27. Councillor James Taylor, Events, Live Music and Nighttime Economy Champion, said, "Oxford has a vibrant music scene and a proud music history. This will help local musicians, venues, promoters and anyone who loves live music. Oxford's live music industry is undergoing a significant financial strain and without council intervention will continue to sink. By backing grassroots music, we're ensuring events actually happen while supporting the livelihoods of those working in this struggling industry. Two £5,000 grants will be made available for music venues, while around 10 grants averaging £1,000 each will support musicians and promoters. Applications opened on August 17th and the deadline is October the 12th at 9 a.m.
That was everything for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, we now have a new landline number for you to call. The number is 01865 377635. That's 01865 377635. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspaper skills. If you need advice on these, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.